The lights are on red. We're away.
Welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, January 9th, 2009. This is episode number 159, the first episode of the new year. And I am Bob Hayes, your host, here today to talk about MotoGP. I got a good show today. We did a call with Jules, come back from our little two-week hiatus that we took there. And of course, you know, wouldn't you know it, some stuff happens during our two-week break. So we're going to be talking about that, which if you haven't been following the news, there was a rumor that Kawasaki was pulling out, and this is a changing every day sort of a news story. And the latest news that we have, which of course did come out since our call, I actually did the call with Jules about 24 hours ago, and it's Thursday night as I record this right now. The latest thing I have now, like we said in the call that I would update with whatever news we had, latest we have now is it looks like Kawasaki will remain in MotoGP for 2009, but it's still nothing official has been said, actually, either way. So we're going to get to that call here in a little while. It's good stuff, even if it is non-relevant news or whatever, which in a couple of days it will be. But it does, you know, Jules and I talk about the whole state of MotoGP and if Kawasaki were to pull out or any of the teams were to pull out, what's going to happen, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's kind of interesting stuff. And there's been some other happenings as well that we also cover. Let's see. Before we get to that, a couple of administrative notes I want to pass on. First of all, thank you very much to Travis Hinson, kind enough to send in a donation to MotoGPOD, which is his second time. Thank you very much, Travis. He's a longtime friend of MotoGPOD. I exchanged quite a few emails with Travis and everything, and it's always good. So I appreciate that a lot. Thanks a lot, Travis. Let's see. Then a sad note. One of our contest winners, we had the contest to give away the calendars from MotoGPMatters.com, if you recall, last month. And we gave away five of those really cool MotoGP Matters calendars. And one of the winners, Kevin McDonald, really nice guy, again, exchanged several emails with him. And his brother passed away in December. So Timothy Patrick McDonald passed away in 2008 there, December. And so maybe take a little time out or whatever, say a prayer, moment of silence, whatever suits your sort of particular personal preference, and think about, you know, fellow MotoGP fan and all of that kind of thing. And we are sorry, Kevin, condolences going out to you from MotoGPOD. And let's see, we really kind of don't have anything else because we pretty much cover most of what I wanted to talk about in the call with Jules. So why don't we just go ahead and get right on with that? All right, we got Jules on the phone. Welcome back, Jules. Hope you had a great holiday and all of that kind of stuff. It's been a long time since we talked to you.
Indeed, it has. Thanks very much, and I hope you had a good one too. I know you did because we just talked.
Yes, I know. We always talk secretly, but we're pretending that this is like brand new. I just called you.
Right. Well, it's so good to hear from you, Bob.
Yeah, it's so nice to talk to you too, Jules. But in any case, what a time to take a 2-week break from the show, because we actually had some fairly significant news occurring during our little hiatus there.
Yeah, and I think that it's probably not worth more than one show in terms of talking about it, but it definitely is shaking things up.
Exactly. It's not something where we could just sort of, you know, have a quick mention in the intro or something like that. I think it's worth the call just to talk about some of the repercussions.
Yeah, totally.
Rumors, everything. So let's jump into it. Why don't we, and anybody who hasn't been following the news very well, or if you rely on MotoGPOD for your news, came out, I think it was actually at the end of December or the very, very first part of January that they first sort of hit the rumor mill that Kawasaki was pulling out of MotoGP. So Kawasaki factory team not going to be racing in 2009. And there was a lot of, you know, it was the Spanish and Italian press, and then it got picked up by Autosport. So it's like, wow, now it's actually got some credibility, and that Kawasaki's not going to be racing. Then we heard on, I believe it was, the official announcement was supposed to happen on the 5th of January, mm-hmm. but a day or two before that, you know, it's like, yes, the riders and mechanics have been notified that you're not going to have jobs next year, and everybody's in panic mode. Hopker was in the news, a few other things and this and that. And the 5th kind of came and went. without any official word.
Right.
And we're still hanging a little bit. Basically, the last good news that we have, the last real news that is relatively current, I believe, is from today, which is we're recording this on Wednesday the 7th. And it was that Kawasaki is thinking about it. You know, rethinking, should they rethink their decision, this kind of business. And so there's meetings going on and...
There's a huge meeting in Japan that
right.
You know, Espeleta flew out to, and I believe Erita sent some people too, right?
Yeah, I think the MSMA, the motorcycle, whatever they're called,
yeah,
had a the Manufacturers Association had a big old meeting, and
it included Ducati. Originally, it was just going to be the Japanese guys, but Ducati was right. Also present,
right? And so they had their meeting, and basically, the news that we're getting out of there is that this decision is not yet totally final, but it might be, et cetera, et cetera. And that's kind of what the rumors first started flying here a week ago. That was one of the things that we kind of pitched out there, was that, is this really just is this Kawasaki trying to play to get some money from Dorna? Do they need their own financial bailout?
I was just going to say that the word bailout is definitely going to come into this
point.
Because, this tactic has been used before, actually, very successfully one year by Team KR.
Kenny
Roberts Sr. Actually pulled this kind of, I don't want to call it a stunt, but this kind of thing like three times, where he was like, well, the sponsors are just not there. And then the sponsors, you know, magically appeared three seasons in a row. And of course, he's gone away. So it's not like that really worked out all that great, you know. And he had a terrible last season before they called it in, so...
Right, which is a shame and all that, but we don't rehash that. But it's kind of one thing when a satellite – well, actually, Team KR is not a satellite. But it's one thing when a small team or a satellite team does this kind of thing. But it's one thing when one of the big four Japanese teams is doing it.
It's absolutely true. Of course, you know, Kawasaki's not been in this sport for very long. They've only been in the sport since, I believe, 2002.
Right. But and they're finishing, you know, roughly last – and all of that, but that's neither here nor there of those sort of things. I thought it was somewhat significant that you have, you know, a relatively significant motorcycle manufacturing company. I mean, Kawasaki sells a lot of motorcycles, and Kawasaki Heavy Industries is a ginormous corporation.
Right.
You know, the motorcycles are only a small part of their entire thing. And if it is as much of a sort of a trick to get a bailout, I thought that was odd in itself. I really did. But so many other odd things have happened, particularly, you know, Honda pulling out of Formula One, very last minute decision, and out of AMA, which is not a shocker at all, and all these sort of things. So I guess in some ways there, it's not all that surprising, but in other ways, it's still somewhat surprises me, especially with this backpedaling that we've got going on right now. Some of the news stories were saying, though, that it's going to cost them so much money anyway, money that they've already spent, because basically they had planned on being there through 2011. And now all of a sudden, if they say, no, we're not going to go, that there's, you know, money that they've already spent. There's fines that they would have to pay to Dorna. There's this and that and the other.
There's contracts that are signed and they have to pay them out anyway. So a lot of these people that are, they quote, laid off would still get their money.
I'm sure
they wouldn't just hand it over. There probably would be some legal bashing going on.
Oh, sure. Of course. Always. But, you know, so it might work out to be that for Kawasaki, it's like, well, you know, we don't really want to be here, but we're going to go ahead. Otherwise, it's going to cost us $20 million. And, you know, so we might as well just throw 5 more or 10 more or 20 more million after that. And, you know, good money after bad, or whatever you want to call it. So I thought it was fairly significant development, and what actually makes it a little more significant, along with another story that we're going to talk about here in just a second, is the whole repercussions, the waterfall of cascading effect of what it does to the whole rest of the lineup.
Well, you know, before we even get into that, remember that Kawasaki was actually being rumored to run a third bike. not that long ago. You know, back in November, they were talking about Aspar getting a third bike, and so it's really a reversal of fortune type of situation here.
Right.
And you know, the fact that they've sunk all this, you know, there's a whole sunk cost theory thing where, I mean, the sunk cost should not force it should not force Kawasaki's hand to like continue. Just because they spent the money does not mean that they should continue anyway, because they're going to spend even more money. So it's understandable in terms of the economic situation, but the grid situation is the one that's really dire, because we're suddenly losing two bikes. You know, we were hoping for three from that team at one point. Now we're actually losing two. So it's pretty dire, and you know, we're already have one of the smallest grids in history. So.
Right, and this is true that the I'm speechless. I'm at a loss for words. But yeah, you're right that in nonsense business wise, it might make a good decision for Kawasaki. Spit it out, Bob. But it's still what does this mean for MotoGP's future, et cetera, because, you know, if Kawasaki goes, how long is it until Suzuki goes? You know, all these sorts of things. Ducati is a very, very small company, and although they're doing quite well in MotoGP and on one of their bikes, you know, how long can they afford to spend the kind of money that they're spending? You know, there's so many questions, and you have World Superbikes basically breathing down MotoGP's neck.
I think that's the most significant thing right there.
Right, exactly.
Because and, you know what, I wouldn't. Ducati would probably be the last one standing, because think about it. That's a company that makes bikes. That's all they do.
Right.
Out of all the teams on the grid. Well, I guess Suzuki makes pretty much just bikes, but they make, well, you know, they make other
they
stuff.
Make cars and stuff too, yeah.
Oh, that's of course, though. They make cars. You're right.
But you're right. And not only does Ducati is a motorcycle factory, but Ducati is a sporty motorcycle factory.
Right. Now,
they
could be running their own cup, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Like World Superbikes was a couple of years ago.
Right. And it does mean a lot for the future of all of this. One thing that I thought was significant is it's not like Kawasaki has a big presence in World Superbikes or AMA or, for that matter, British Superbikes or any of the, you know, series. It's not like they're dominating something else that they can shift their focus to. And other than drag racing to a point.
Well, they've got good results in motocross.
Yeah, motocross, and I think also a bit drag racing, but road racing side of things. It's not like they have something else to fall back on. It's like, oh well, we've decided MotoGP is not for us, so we're going to focus on World Superbikes.
Right.
It's like,
right.
Yeah, you know, great.
Focus on that shitty team.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I thought the whole thing was significant. I don't want to see him go, largely because of the repercussions, the possibilities of what this means for MotoGP's future.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have to say that I felt the same way about Team KR leaving, because I think Team KR leaving kind of shut a chapter on, it was also, you know, Ilmore same year. So it was kind of shutting the book on privateer teams, privateer manufacturers. You know, and now it's like the factories leaving the sport is definitely in trouble. It was in trouble because of the rule changes, and now we've got this thing. And I think, that, you know, there's definitely reasons to worry for guys like Espeleta, no matter what he says, because he's, you know, of course, came out today with some kind of statement where he's like, oh, I'm not worried at all. Everything looks great. We're the greatest.
Yeah, that's
blah, blah, blah.
Smoke.
As long as Valentino Rossi's still there on the grid, yeah, we'll bring him in. But imagine if Rossi, like, went to Superbikes. That'd be the end of MotoGP.
I agree. If it happened this year, it would be bad, bad, bad news. I mean, you know, if it were to suddenly some weird situation goes on, Rossi's gone. It's like, wow, what do you got now? Yeah. And the thing is MotoGP is facing some of the dilemmas that, like, Formula One, where they're trying to tinker and make the results happen the way they want them to happen, by fiddling around with the rules, which tends to backfire and costs more money than you anticipated and all sorts of other stuff. And then it doesn't even end up the result of what you wanted in the first place is closer racing and blah, blah, blah. But there's even more fractionalization, if you want to call it that, of who makes the decisions, of who makes MotoGP happen. There's more in MotoGP than there is in Formula One. You know, with Formula One, you have Bernie Eccleston and Max, what's his face,
Hitler,
with the FIM, and you know, that's those two entities. Whereas in MotoGP, you've got like four entities that are making these decisions that tend to be somewhat at odds with each other of their goals and their methods of going about trying to make these decisions.
Yeah, I find the interesting thing I find about all this stuff is Formula One went through a kind of a dry spell at the beginning of the century, and it feels weird to say that, but you know, whatever.
Yeah.
The century, but
millennium, the beginning of the millennium.
Yeah, you're right.
Yes.
But they've managed to kind of, I think, build off of the drama of the racing, aside from the racing itself. And it's still, because, I actually paid attention a little more this year because we had, you know, a Polish driver for the first time doing a full season. He did really well. And then, you know, the last race was, everything was actually, it was a very exciting thing to watch, that last race. After my nap during the middle of it, but if you look at it, it's like, you know, it was still came down to like two or three incidents. It just happened to be very close to the end, so that made it more exciting. But it was just two or three incidents. Most of the time, it's still the same. The formula is still failing in terms right. of making actual exciting races. Right. And you know, MotoGP is kind of heading in that same direction a lot of ways, but it's got a long way to go to get, you know, as bad. And I don't want to say as bad, but to the same level.
The same,
where you start, where the stories about the drivers and riders, whatever, become much more important than the racing itself, you know?
Right, and all you've got is qualifying.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of, once you watch qualifying, we know the results of the race, darn near. You know, I mean, there might be something that happens, but, you know. Yeah. And actually, Matthew Scott's editorial in this week's Cycle News was quite good, and he brought up NASCAR, and you know that all of these series, you know, okay, the fans want close racing because yes, close racing is fun, it's exciting, it's great, blah blah blah, but to try to sort of engineer it with rules tends to never work, because if you dumb down the engineering rules, if you put these somewhat artificial limits on the engineers, you're still going to have that really, really great group of engineers at such and such factory, you know, rising to the level that they can, and that other group of engineers that's not quite as good is equally penalized, you know. So it's sort of like, and he compared it to socialism.
Oh, yeah, good point.
And yeah, but it just sort of drives everybody down a notch or three or five notches, you know, however many notches. And I thought that was excellent. And then he brought up the, you know, NASCAR analogy. Well, okay, NASCAR's got great close racing, but how do they do it? Very, very simply. You know, when the cars spread out too much, you throw out a caution and you let everybody bunch up again, and then you go to the green flag. But we all know what we think of NASCAR. It's like the world, whatever wrestling is called now, WWE of motorsport. You know, it's fake, and I don't want to see MotoGP go that way.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're saying. Going back to this whole Kawasaki thing, I think that one of the reasons I can totally see somebody who has actually sunk the costs already still pulling out despite is this lack of results, which is kind of getting to what you were just saying, which is a result of, I think, these monumental rule changes that came down in the last few years that really, you know, forced these guys to re-engineer, retool everything, and jump through hoops, and only a few engineering teams were capable of actually keeping pace.
Right.
You know, I mean, Suzuki was just getting their legs And both Suzuki and Kawasaki just seemed to be getting their shit together in the 990 era when it got pulled out from under them, pretty much. And then they had to start over, and they were hurting.
Right. I agree. And what's scary is some of the news reports that I've been running across, while kind of double-checking on the news about Kawasaki and all of that, some of the things that I saw is more and more talk of new rule changes for MotoGP. You know, let's limit the revs. Let's make the engines last several races. Let's do all this kind of stuff. And yeah, come on, guys. We saw this in Formula One. You make a rule that says, okay, now instead of an engine lasting 300 kilometers, which, you know, a team can burn through 300 kilometers in about no time flat. Mm-hmm. So, you say, oh, this engine must last two race weekends. So now it's not putting costs down, because what happens is the costs are sort of shifted to the development side, because all of a sudden you're developing an engine that has to last that long. And,
but to be fair, it's very difficult to have a problem with that particular rule, that particular suggestion, because that actually is helping in the development of better technology.
True.
Right.
Exactly. And that was also somewhat brought up.
I know it costs money, but it does do that. Whereas, like, saying that the ECUs have to be regulated and all that kind of crap, that's going backwards in the technological.
Making a spec series that you're not ever going to have trickle down to the bikes that we actually buy and drive and all of that. Exactly.
Yeah. Or rev limiters or like, that's crap to me.
Right. The rev limiter rule actually is one, if you say, okay, because realistically, what are the chances that you're going to be buying a street bike anytime soon that does 20,000 RPM? Fairly slim. Because in order to get those kind of revs, you have to, everything is so sort of fragile and specific and tight and perfect, you know. And maybe if you said, let's limit the revs to still something fairly insane, like, you know, 16 or 17,000 RPM.
You know, there's street bikes that do that now.
I know there are, but it's, you know, I don't know. That one might make a certain amount of sense.
If you say it, you can have unlimited revs, but it has to last for, you know, two, three race weekends, I think that, you know, the revs are going to be an interesting variable.
That's true. So then you might see street bikes that can do, higher and higher in revs. And if we, you know, if we're just talking about revs, but I don't know, I tend to wonder that a simple blanket rule like this engine must last so many race weekends.
Well, the problem is how you implement the rule, right? I mean, so what happens if you crash and you bend something on the engine?
Right.
And like,
right.
You know, what
are
what
you penalized for that? Yeah.
You break the crankcase and now, okay, so what are you allowed to fix?
Right. The thing is, okay, look, I mean, honestly, at the level of we're talking about here and the amount of dollars we're talking about here, it's like, wow, we think this engine is going to fail because it's, it's over revving. So go out there and crash.
Exactly.
I can see that happening.
Of course.
You know?
Of course.
And so then it's like, wow, look, we bent our engine during crash. So we need to take advantage of rule 437 alpha that says that because we bent the engine, we don't get penalized. You know? So I could see that happening. I really could.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like the rule makes sense in spirit, but it could never be enforced.
That's the thing.
Or it would be enforced the same way that it's enforced in Formula One, which is crazy. Which is books and books of rules that nobody understands.
Right, that they make up on the spot. You know, it's kind of like, well, you know, for this particular race weekend, we wanted Ferrari to win and all of that. Yeah.
A lot of those rules came under the guise of safety and reduction of costs, and neither has actually been achieved, right? I mean, safety.
I agree.
I don't think necessarily has gone up. I think that the only thing that really has changed is top speed.
Yeah, but, I agree.
But that's it.
The whole
you know, and nobody,
the whole reducing costs and the whole safety issue and all of that is smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, the number of crashes at top speed is. I mean, I only remember one crash since I've been watching motorcycle racing that was at on a straight, you know, at high speed, which is that Nakano crash in 2004.
Talking to Connor, yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. You know? And I mean, if you really wanted to have a rule that affected safety and stuff, it would be regarding the tracks. You know, let's make more and more tracks where there's just miles and miles of runoff and, you know, lots of air fencing, and let's, instead of kitty litter gravel, let's use, like, you know, little foam blocks or something like right. that. You know, think the rules like that would influence safety.
Yeah, but that's the problem is then you shifted the expense to the facilities, which necessarily,
exactly.
you know,
which can't afford
is
it.
Much right. which is much more difficult. Now you have to deal with every single government and
I agree. But this is, you know, this is when we say, you know, we're talking about, you know, safety, I think it's a cover story.
Yes.
And that if you really wanted to make rules about safety, that's where you would have to do it, is on the track side of things. But you can't do that because the tracks can't afford it. And that there are some tracks where it's like the track itself is so special that we really don't want to enforce the safety rules simply because it would ruin the nature of the track. You know, that happens a lot too. So, you know, that's a tough one, but I do think that they use that as I don't know the word for it. I'm, you know, scapegoat comes to mind, but that's it's not right. But you know, that's their false flag that they fly of why we're doing this rule thing.
It comes up all the time, and it's bullshit, because most of the riders are saying we'd be a lot safer back on the 990s where basically even if you had traction control, the bikes were so powerful that going through corners had to be, you had to square off corners and all that kind of good stuff, and that actually meant less high speed, you know, high sides type of situations.
Exactly. We're exactly, because we've seen that with the 800 that they just simply carry more corner speed. So the top, the outright straight line speed might be less, but the corner speed is much higher, and that's where your crashes happen. And that, you know, that's been covered in a multitude of editorials and commentaries and all of that sort of thing.
Let's just get back to Kawasaki. So I mean, the whole repercussions thing. I mean, for me, the saddest thing about it is the whole Melandri thing, right? I mean, talk about bad luck this guy's been through, right? Like he was doing really well, and I love the fact that his manager loves to point out that he has 5 MotoGP wins and Pedrosa has 6.
Right.
You know? So he's obviously very talented. He was doing great. He was at the peak of his career at Gresini. And then, you know, but he was demanding that factory ride. It was disastrous year for him with Ducati. And then he goes and switches to Kawasaki. He has a good test, you know? He feels good on the machine. And they freaking pull out,
right?
You know, bad. I mean, 2 years in a row. If he doesn't get a ride, if this thing goes through, the Kawasaki does not come back, he can't get a ride, which is looking more and more likely if that happened. That's 2 years that he's been basically a non player.
Yeah, it's not a good thing at all for him. I thought though that ride wise, you're right. Actually, no. Thinking about it, it is looking a little bit like in this musical chairs situation, he's going to be.
So let's go over like what happened. Like the first rumors that started flying was that Hopper was going to take Edwards' ride at Tech Trois because of his Monster sponsorship. And then Melandri being. Apparently, Gresini really liking Melandri, and there was already talk about him coming back at one point, that he was going to take De Angelis' place.
Right.
You know, displacing two riders. One of the riders is a guy who's probably only going to be in the series for a little while longer. The other guy is just coming in. So both of them have their little stories and want to stick around. Both have very good reasons to want to stick around. So it was. I thought that was, those rumors actually made me kind of boil, especially Hopper replacing Edwards, because I don't think that would be the most unfair thing I could imagine.
Right, fair, you know? Unfair is an excellent term for that. And I know I was reading that and I was like, boy, that's just crap, you know. But yeah, the Monster sponsorship.
Nothing against Hopper, because I think he was. I don't. Like I've kind of lost some level of expectations for him, but I think at one point he was really, truly a championship.
The next guy. Right?
Yeah, the next guy. But I think something happened along the way. But anyway, but the thing is that, you know, Edwards is no slouch. Edwards has better results than Hopper has, you know, through
his
career.
I think he's a better development writer.
And he's a better development writer. And yeah. He's, let's face it, he's really funny. Mm-hmm. And that goes, you know, he's like the. He's
actually,
like,
I mean, charisma does go a long way.
Yeah.
I mean, if Colin Edwards can fill seats in the stands and drive eyeballs to the television sets and all of that.
Exactly.
Then that's a good thing for, you know, the business side of MotoGP, because it is a business. And we've talked about that one before. What keeps coming up about Hopper is the monster sponsorship, as though this is some holy grail.
I know. That's the other thing that I just don't quite get. It's like, I mean, Monster could pull out too.
Right.
They don't have
Yeah, in a minute.
Yeah.
And the Monster sponsorship is barely, if at all, going to cover Hopper's salary.
Right.
You know, whereas nobody really cried a whole lot about the Michelin tie-in with Edwards when we booted Michelin out of the series and said Bridgestone is going to be the only tire manufacturer. Colin Edwards was probably, next to Nicky Hayden, Colin Edwards was the Michelin guy.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I mean, more than Nicky Hayden. Nicky Hayden was the only guy that was even close.
Yeah.
And,
because he was, they were actually paying his part of his salary.
Right. And he lost that. And there was no crocodile tears about that one. Which I, you know, at the same time, I thought it's like, you know,
well, look who was involved, right? I mean, Edwards is now going to cry. He's going to turn into some kind of like little humorous jab and move on.
Right. And Edwards had his own issues with Michelin. I mean, even Edwards was getting sick of Michelin's mess ups and was, you know, raising the BS flag that, you know, hey, these guys screwed up.
Yeah.
A little bit. But still, as far as like a whole sort of overall career affecting decision, I think that the Michelin thing probably affected Colin Edwards the most out of any of the other
writers. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, so, but all of a sudden, okay, so Hopper's got the monster money, right? Which worth, I think they're talking in the neighborhood of $3 million a year or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, $3 million a year for a MotoGP team is a fraction of what you need. Like I said, it's not even going to cover Hopper's salary. It's not even guaranteed that he's going to stick with that. You know, it's not like this is some, you know, umbilical cord tie-in that no matter what happens, Hopper, this monster sponsorship will guarantee follow him to wherever he goes. And so, you know, I've been a little bit skeptical about that.
Montreal's not going to suddenly paint his bikes green, you know, whereas the Kawasaki bikes are already green. So it kind of works out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that one was kind of funny. And then there was talk
about...
I think
there's some truth to it, actually. I think that there's probably a lot less, like, you know, hey, you know, we kind of squeeze this thing in, and they've got the livery matches our brand colors and stuff. It's a perfect matchup, Kawasaki.
Yeah, no, I can see that happening big time. But yeah, exactly. Once you move to a different team, a different manufacturer, you know, it may not necessarily be quite such a done deal.
Yeah.
Did you see the latest rumor that possibility of Hopper going to AMA?
Yeah, but that got shut down very quickly.
Yeah, it's a very weak rumor. But
so to follow up on that, the whole Tech Twa thing. I mean, Herb Ponchwal actually, I think, came up and said and laughed about it and said, "There's no way we're going to kick Colin out. It's a stupid rumor and just forget about it." So
right.
That one got crushed. Then. I think the DeAngelis thing was a little bit softer in terms of being dismissed, but I think that basically it was just like, hey, look, we got contracts, we're not going to break them.
Exactly.
And so I think that one's and so now these two riders, you know, if Kawasaki does drop out, still have no ride. There was some rumor about like you said, Hopper moving to AMA and Melanji going to World Superbikes, but both those have been squashed.
There's also the rumor of Melandri going to the new team run by Pablo Nieto. On Day 2000 team.
Oh, I have not heard that one. I mean, I've heard all sorts of permutations with that one, but not that one.
And let's see where. Oh boy, where was that one at?
Well, I know there was the talk about putting Canepa on Ande.
Yeah,
and then having
is that what I'm talking about? That's what I'm talking about. I'm sorry. Oh yeah, my god, I screwed it up.
Because Landry's not going to ride a Ducati.
No. Okay, I should go back and edit all that out, but I won't. But no, you're right. It's a Canepa. It's Canepa that's going to Ande, and I wanted to get to that in a minute, and I got my teams mixed up.
I think this is perfect that this little mistake happened because that's how ridiculous it's all getting. Nobody actually knows what's going on. I bet. You could go down in, well, there's no paddock right now, but like, you know, a group of these guys and at one of these meetings, and like, where is this guy riding again? You know,
yeah,
like,
what color leathers should Alpine Stars make for this guy? Yeah. Actually, I did that. I printed out this is from, let's see, what is today? The day is the 8th. So this is from 3 weeks ago, dated Tuesday, 16 December 2008. It's the MotoGP 2009 provisional entry list.
Oh, there you go. Perfect.
And I printed this out because I wanted to kind of go down this and say how clearly provisional this is. And I actually only made three, you know, big arrows, right? But let's run down the list real quick. Number three, Danny Pedrosa, Repsol Honda team, safe.
Yep.
And number four, Andrea Dovizioso.
Wait, so
Repsol
he's going to be running number three? He's actually going to be running a number three? He's not going to go back
to 26? That's what's on this list. Wow. It's a provisional list, but that's what's on the list, yeah. Number four, Andrea Dovizioso, Repsol Honda team, safe, I think.
Dovizioso?
Yeah, pretty safe.
Yes.
Number five, Colin Edwards, Tech Twi, Yamaha. Like we just talked about a minute ago. Safe.
Probably safe at this point.
Yeah. Number seven, Christopher Mullen.
It was, you know, a couple of days ago, we would have been like, oh my God, Colin.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, a couple of days from now, it might be the same thing. It might be the same thing for Dovizioso.
Yeah.
Number seven, Christopher Mullen, Rizzo Suzuki. Safe unless Suzuki.
That's the other thing is there was somewhere, I don't know where, but I read that there was also, you know, people saying, well, if Kawasaki pulls out, Suzuki's next.
Exactly. I mean, we said that at the beginning of the call. How long is it until this whole, you know, over the last couple of months, these companies have lost so much book value. You know, it's all paper money, but whatever it is, you know, it's a balance sheet. And it's like these guys are scrambling to fix this. And racing by many shareholders, CEOs, whatever they are, executive guys, et cetera, you know, the racing is a luxury. It's like that's the first thing you're going to cut. Okay. And so you never know. But Christopher Mullen, number seven, Rizla Suzuki. If he's riding in MotoGP next year, it will be on a Suzuki.
Yeah.
Okay. Randy Dipinier, LCR Honda.
Well, so this is. Do we want to talk about the whole Melandri LCR thing right now?
Melandri LCR thing.
Have you heard about this one?
Yeah. Do you want to go down the whole list and get to him, or do you want to just jump into it?
On the list. Okay. So he's pretty much in, but you know, with a little like a star next to his name or something.
Exactly. It's going to be an asterisk here. So let's run down this. I'll go real quick. Mm-hmm. So that 14 was Randy Dipinier. Number 15, Alex De Angelis of the San Carlo Honda Gresini. Grassini's been up in the news lately a little bit, but I think that seat is safe. Number 21, John Hopkins, Kawasaki. Right now, that's looking real doubtful. I mean, unless Kawasaki does change their mind, which is the latest news that we heard, that they're rethinking their decision, the last official word that Hopkins has is he does not have a ride next year.
Right?
Number 24, Tony Elias, also on a Gresini, San Carlo Honda Gresini, looking good.
He's looking good, also because he's getting the factory engine from Honda.
Right.
So they've backed him. They've backed him hard from the factory, so that's looking. I think that's a pretty solid seat.
Yeah, number 27, Casey Stoner, Ducati Marlboro, duh. You know, unless some kind of bizarre total financial meltdown happens and Ducati pulls out, which that's not going to happen. Casey Stoner will be riding that
Ducati's
motorcycle.
Ducati's going to be running.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They've got at least one more year in them. 33, Marco Melandri on the Kawasaki Honda, the Kawasaki Racing Team. That one, big old question mark there. And that's where we want to talk a little bit about where is Melandri going to go. Melandri has a lot of legs as far as being Italian. He's won 5 GPs, and Danny Pedrosa has won 6, right? You know, yeah. Melandri the guy's got talent. He really does. He had a disastrous year last year. But other than that, you know, let's find the guy the right motorcycle and make the right combination and everything else. And I think we can make this happen, right?
Yeah, he was a champion in 250s, and he was a bit of a crasher when he was with Yamaha in 2003-2004. But then under Grissini's wing, he really blossomed and was amazing.
Right, exactly. And I don't think that he's going to be let go. You know, it's we don't want to see Melandri just flat out disappear. But is it that there's been so many right, you're wrong place at the wrong time kind of situations for Marco that, you know, is this, what are we seeing with Marco? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, so keep going down the list, because we go back to Mark Melandri, and because that's tied in with the LCR.
Okay, the next number is significant, and we're going to have to talk about it. Number 36, Mika Kallio, Pramac Racing is on the provisional list.
Right.
Okay, now that's the Lecce team. This is the team that Liam Schubert worked for, and et cetera, et cetera. Also, in
well,
the
it's
last
not
Lecce couple
anymore.
Exactly. Lecce pulled out, and the loss of that money means that. Now that team has decided they're going to run one Ducati. And that is – Mika Kallio's seat is safe as of now. He right. will be the one guy on – I assume it's still Pramac Racing. But, you know, could it change? I don't know. Who's the team head of that – who's the guy, the head guy on that one now? Because it's no longer that team.
I have no idea. I have no idea.
Yeah, can
Felix?
Can something or other. I read his name here a while ago. Paolo Campinotti.
Oh, right, right. That's right.
So he's going to be able to fund the lease, and I'm reading this off of motorcyclenews.com. It's a blah, 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 Alice. This is dated 2nd of January. It's been rumored, which I think it's now official, that Alice has withdrawn, so Paolo Campinotti is only able to fund the lease of one of the GP9 motorcycles from Ducati.
Well,
and that bike will be
two,
for the...
Basically, yeah, one rider. One rider's worth.
Well, yeah. One guy's worth, exactly. And that's a big problem. That one comes up. We should talk about that later.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever. So that one's going to be for Mika Kallio, which leaves number 88, which is much farther down our list, Nicolò Canepa, who is the other rider that was on this provisional list, who was supposed to be riding for that team, the Pramac Tank team, and now all of a sudden he has no motorcycles. So Kallio is safe. Number 46, Valentino Rossi, Fiat Yamaha team. I think they're going to fire his ass because, you know, he sucks, right?
Yeah.
52, James Toseland, Tech 3, Yamaha, safe.
Yeah.
59, Sete Gibernau, Grupo Francisco Hernando. Sete is about the biggest news you got going on in the Ducati camp.
He's not going away.
No, exactly. Number 65, Loris Caporazzi, Rizla Suzuki MotoGP team. He'll be fine. Number 69, Nicky Hayden on the Ducati Marlboro. Again, fine.
Yep.
72, Yuki Takahashi, Scott Racing Team MotoGP.
It looks pretty solid. It looks pretty solid, but, you know, there's, again, this whole Melandri thing has definitely, it's touched Team Scott and LCR and Grissini.
Exactly. And it started the music again for the musical chairs. But unlike a regular musical chairs game where everybody gets up and walk around, this is like where half the people stay in their seats and the other few guys that are the somewhat second tier all have to fight for the few remaining seats. You following me?
Yeah.
And number 88, Niccolo Canepa, which on the provisional list published 16 December 2008, 3 weeks ago, is listed Niccolo Canepa Pramac Racing. That's gone, according to the latest news that we have, fairly reliable news.
Right.
Although, there's
talk about him going to Ande, so.
Exactly. And that I think that is also fairly reliable news, that the Ande team is former 125 GP racer Pablo Nieto and his brother made the Ande 2000 squad, and they wanted to put Fonse Nieto, who no longer has a seat in World Super Dupers, on that motorcycle.
That's right.
But in a nutshell, Ducati said, no, you're going to give Niccolo the ride. So I'm not sure how that garage is going to be, but I would say that the latest best information that we have right now, Niccolo Canepa is safe of having a ride-ish, assuming the Ande 2000 team works out, you know, and assuming that there's a lot of assumptions there. You follow me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Then our last guy, number 99, Jorge Lorenzo Fiat Yamaha, also safe. So, like I said, I have three big X's of people that have moved or are two that are not safe, Hopkins and Melandri, and Niccolo Canepa is safe with this other team that we don't know even for sure if it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then a couple of semi question marks. So it's a little bit like silly season started all over again after we thought it had worked itself out.
Yeah, good way to put it.
Yeah, and this is like I said when we took a couple weeks off for the holidays of MotoGPOD and everything, and then all of a sudden there's news, there's things to talk about. It's like that's the way it works, right? But
right. So we talk about Hopper. Hopper really only touched one other possible rider, which was Edwards, and that was squashed. But the rumors with Melandri were very interesting. So one idea was that he was going to go to Gresini to replace De Angelis, but apparently Gresini has no interest in fighting any kind of contract battles with De Angelis. And I think, isn't De Angelis represented by, like, what's his name? Same guy who also manages Loris Caparossi and basically a very big time manager. So probably somebody you don't want to mess with.
I think De Angelis is bringing some sponsorship money as well.
Oh, is he?
I think so. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm getting at you. I hope you were going to jump in with a yeah you're right.
No, I have no idea.
I'm not 100% sure on that one off the top of my head.
But I think basically that so that would be another reason. But I think that like getting into a contract war when Gresini actually has a good team and they're getting they probably are being pressured by Honda to like, hey, look, we're going to give you good motor and stuff. Let's start working on like the team and not get sucked into any kind of. Legal games and that could hurt the health of the team.
So
it's not like these guys don't get results. These guys get results. So it's a much more serious game for them.
Then you got
Team Scott, who produced a very they were rookies last year, just as much as Dovizioso was, and they really proved themselves. They kicked some serious butt. I mean, they were rookies in MotoGP, sort of. I mean, obviously.
Right. No, I know what you mean. And how much of that was Dovizioso? How much of that was the team, et cetera, et cetera?
Right.
It is a team effort, but I do think that Dovizioso brought a lot to that table.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I'm not 100% sure that Takahashi's going to be bringing that same level of talent.
Well, he definitely shown some serious brilliance in the last year into 250s. So.
Right. And he could translate that into 800 cc's and all of that. And So we'll have to see. But anyway,
the thing is that, Melandri was kind of tied with them because there was some talk, even earlier during the silly season, that they would be running two bikes, those guys, Team Scott.
Right.
But I think
Honda said that they can't supply another motorcycle.
Exactly. They basically said six bikes, that's it.
Right, right, and, right. 12 bikes.
Yeah. Right, 12 bikes. 12 seats. I mean, 6 seats. And then LCR, this was much more substantiated rumor, was that that he would go to LCR, and that because Honda was saying they would only supply the 12 bikes, they would actually only use one each. Which,
yeah,
the moment
yeah,
I heard
yeah,
that,
I saw that one. Yeah,
the moment I heard that, I started laughing to myself because I was like, okay, so Randy DePugnier,
especially with Randy DePugnier as the other guy, yeah,
the one guy in the entire grid that you don't want to that you don't want to trust with just one bike, you know,
exactly. So, yeah, who's well, you better get your suppliers.
He gets
really
one and
on
a half
board.
Bikes, and then Melanger gets half. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, they, and basically they're going to need enough parts that they could build, you know, several more motorcycles of, you know, all the bits that tend to break. And, right. And that's kind of funny. In some ways, and you know, not to knock Randy DePugnier and all of that, but I'm a little worried or a little wondering why is his seat so safe? You know, if there's one guy that's out there,
you're
that's a bit of a Say again?
You mean DePugnier?
DePugnier, yeah, yeah. I mean, Randy, as Greg White calls him, Randy DePugnier. And, I mean...
Because he's French. Do you have to have one French guy, right?
I think that might be it, honestly. And but he's a bit of a crasher. You know, he does actually show remarkable, you know, sparks of talent.
You know what? Does that kind of remarkable talent, like... You get to use you get to be that kind of wild talent for 1 year,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
I think it's fourth year.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
yeah,
you know, because I remember like Barros when he entered GP racing.
It was 1983.
And there was this fantastic race where. He caught up with Kevin Schwantz and then passed him. And then afterwards, Kevin Schwantz was saying, well, I kind of let him go because I knew he was going to crash. And sure enough, a couple laps later, he crashed and Schwantz won the race. So anyway, so
Casey Stoner's first year in MotoGP could be said to be that. I mean,
you're right. You're right. I think it's a little bit different because I think that
there were other factors.
Barros really was a wild kid. I don't think Stoner was crashing because he's a wild kid. I think he's a very calculating dude, and just ridiculously fast in the machine, and basically just not matched with the machine very well.
Right.
Whereas Barros was just wild and crazy, and that's the kind of feeling I get about DePugnier, that he's just wild and crazy, and it's time that. You know, 3 years ago was time for him to stop being wild and crazy and actually concentrate on racing and finishing races.
Right. A bit like Ruben Chaus.
Chaus
is a Benetton winner guy.
You're right.
And, you know, remarkable sparks of brilliance and talent and wow, look at this guy. And then, pow,
much more so than DePugnier, because DePugnier, you know, has been amazing during qualifying free practice for a couple of laps.
Tends to crash on the first lap, whereas Chaus tends to wait till halfway through the race. Yeah. Wow. But one thing that Randy DePugnier, I'm going to bring this up, even though I know I'll get a bunch of pictures in the email, that Randy DePugnier offers these fantastic chest shots and ab shots for Grace over at the Formula One blog. And if you don't listen to the Formula One blog, you got to listen to formulaoneblog.com. It's a fantastic thing. Grace is a big MotoGP fan, and it's a running joke that you know, we get to the shots of Randy DePugnier taking off his leathers and showing his, you know, ripped abs and all of that. And it is. It's true. You know, you don't know how many freaking pictures I've gotten of semi-naked MotoGP riders because of this whole thing, too. And I forward them all to Grace. Say, here you go. Here's Nikki. Here's Toseland. Here's, you know, whoever.
So anyway, there was this talk about DePugnier and Melanger sharing two bikes, and I thought it was hilarious.
That's just ridiculous. It's a terrible idea. Yeah, laughable.
And of course, it was eventually squashed. So that's done too, and that basically leaves, you know, nothing.
Right. Exactly.
There's nothing unless Kawasaki somehow pulls their act together.
I tend to think that that's what's going to happen. Be honest with you. at this point right now on Wednesday evening, the 7th, and you know, I checked the news. I was hoping there was going to be something from Japan because, you know, it's as we record this, it's the end of the day in Japan. And I was hoping that there'd be some kind of news that, yeah, look, Kawasaki just changed their mind. As of yet, we don't have anything. But I think that that's going to be what the case will work out to be as.
Let's hope.
My hunch.
Let's hope.
Now, whether or not that means that Hopkins and Melandri have a successful season or a season that is sort of fully backed by the factory or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, well, that's a different story. But I think they will be out there on the grid.
Yeah, we'll see. I have my doubts, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But again, we don't know nothing at this point. By the time this show actually goes on, it's probably going to be...
Right. We've got basically, well, 24 hours or so until this show is posted, and realistically 36 to 48 hours before people start listening to it. There's a lot that can happen, as we have seen in that time frame.
Yeah.
of new news and all of that sort of stuff.
But bailout is definitely the method of the day, of the year, or whatever. I mean, I just read that Larry Flint is asking for a bailout for the porn industry.
He is? Really?
Yes. Yeah.
You're not joking.
I'm not joking.
What does the porn industry need a bailout for? I mean, God damn. So, well, that covers our MotoGP 2009 provisional entry list that is completely out of date now and pretty much trash. So we're gonna, there we go. Right in the trash cans.
You know what I was thinking is the next thing that we're going to see... we're going to see pullouts from is venues.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean,
I can see that happening.
What was the last thing you've heard about Hungary? I mean, and they're actually building a track for that. So mm-hmm.
Is that going to happen? Is that
yeah,
going to
exactly.
finish?
Is that going to happen? I don't know. And then you start looking at some of these outlier races like well, I guess Sepang's got money
for now.
And Qatar has money. Actually, so
Qatar's got plenty of money. They're not worried about it.
Yeah. Australia was. I remember Australia was already on the cutting, on the provisional cutting block for a few years because they were thinking of moving the race to.
It's over by Sydney, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That would be a superb shame because, of course, that's one of my favorite venues to watch is the Phillip Island Round. But yeah, I guess Indianapolis and Laguna Seca are pretty safe. I don't think we're going to be losing those guys, and the European rounds are, you know, not as expensive to run. So,
and I'm actually searching the news right now, and I saw Mugello dropped from 2009 calendar, and I got like, oh my god! But it's a DTM Deutsche Touring Masters.
Okay,
we're not going to see Mugello drop from the MotoGP calendar.
That'd be the end of the world.
Yes, it would be bad.
So before we sign off, I wanted to. Give a shout out to our buddy from Eurosport over there, Toby Moody, or ex Eurosport buddy, who's in South America. I don't know why they're still calling it the car, but whatever. And he's reporting for the SBS, so we'll have a show in the link for that because they have really, really good, of course, commentary because Toby's there doing it, and they have some nice graphics. It's a good way to kind of review it if you're not watching it, you know, every day or whatever.
Right, right. The Dakar, the rally, I mean, they call it the Dakar Rally, even though it's not taking place in Africa this year. It's taking place in South America. It's so fantastic to watch because of the whole mix of everything. You know, I mean, the way it's done, you know, motorcycles, quads, cars, big
cultures,
trucks.
Many different cultures.
Oh yeah, it's a fascinating event,
which is kind of a shame because the South American rounds doesn't offer as much in terms of variety, like the Paris to Dakar rally did, because you know there you went through many cultures and it's a very tight space, whereas you know Argentina is pretty big.
It's long. Yeah. And I agree. And I don't want to get started off on a big old thing about terrorists, but you know, that when they canceled last year, I was livid.
So the site is sbs.com.au, Dakar 2009, but anyway, you'll put the link up and
I will.
And then the other thing is that Matthew Thorne, otherwise known as Tornado on some of the forums, he sent us an email about a month ago that he was on a road trip also down to South America with his girlfriend, Ina, and they have a blog up, so put a link up for that because it's been really fascinating reading their entries. They're usually like a couple of days after the fact, but they're very, very fun to read.
Right. Really sort of his own personal long way down journey.
Yeah, exactly.
That he's got going on.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's cool stuff. So we'll definitely put up a link to that. And hopefully, Matthew, I don't know if you're getting the podcast, but if you are, big shout out to you and lots of luck. And it's really cool to follow your travels. All right. Well, we had planned that this show was going to be the start of our sort of season review of MotoGP 2008, and we were going to talk about each of the rounds and kind of go down. And then this news happened, and I think we had a good call here of just silly season redux, if you want to call it, silly mm-hmm. season part deux, whatever it is, you know, that it sort of happened. And I think this was a you know, we had to kind of, you know, live special extra MotoGPOD. Right. Yeah. Right.
And then, we'll do some kind of review thing, but we'll do a couple of rounds, two to four rounds, a call starting next week, and hopefully we'll know more about this Kawasaki situation by then.
Exactly, and I don't see that we need to talk on and on and about it next week for another hour, but you know, you never know. I mean, the way things are developing, we might have all kinds of stuff to talk about. But that's the plan right now. Is that we'll of course bring you up on whatever news that we've got going on that we can find out. Plus, we do want to review the 2008 season. There's some excellent series of articles on MotoGP.com about each rider's 2008 season, written by all sorts of different journalists.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's been fascinating.
Yeah. They've been relatively short, many of them, and stuff like that. But it's good to see the, you know, like Matt Oxley reviews Nikki Hayden's 2008 season or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I thought those were, it's interesting to see the different insights of what these guys have to say.
Yeah, so. And definitely, like, you know, for those of you who don't know this yet, MotoGPMatters.com is the place to get the most, like, interesting news.
It's amazing. I'm not sure if David actually speaks all those languages or has sort of tame translators or mm-hmm. what, but he's pulling in the best of the news, if you want to call it that, or crazy rumors or whatever they are, from the Spanish and Italian press, along with the English language press, and just all over the world, all these things, German stuff, and he combines it all. And MotoGP Matters is in English. But it puts it in a nutshell, and I do. I use that a lot for show
it's
prep.
It's like my first filter. It's like I check that first, and then I start, you know, going out to the
start
other
digging
RSS
around,
feeds.
Right, and seeing what else you can find based on what, you know, wow, look at what David's talking about. Yep. And, of course, if you haven't got the calendar, I think they're still selling off their calendars, which you have one, right, Jules, I hope.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. And whatever, it's been great talking to you, Jules. I'm glad we, you know, kind of got back on our track of calls.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to be looking forward to some really, really good calls here in the next few months and for the 2009 season.
Cool. All right, man.
That's going to do it for today's show. Hope you enjoyed it. Thank you very much for downloading it. Do appreciate it. Make sure you check out those links that we mentioned in the show. Matthew Thorne and Ina Shmelyova, their blog called Southern Exposure, which covers their trip through South America, motorcycle ride. That's really, really good stuff. That link is up there on the website. And also Toby Moody's coverage of the Dakar Rally is available on the SBS website. Both those links are on the MotoGPOD.com website. Now, if you prefer to watch your television actually on your television and you are in the United States, Versus is covering the Dakar Rally again, which they have been doing the past couple of years. So that's a cable channel that It's in a lot of packages. You may get it. You may not get it. It's called Versus. So check that out. They're doing it all through January. It's really, really good stuff. If you've never seen anything of the Dakar, you've got to watch it. Watch it online. Watch it on your local channels, wherever you are at. And like I said, in the United States, it's Versus. And elsewhere, you know, check your local listings. Go to the official Dakar Rally website. Just check out D-A-K-A-R, Dakar 2009. Google that. You'll find their website. All kinds of good stuff. Maybe I'll put a link for the official Dakar website as well in the show notes. That would be a good idea, wouldn't it? So check those out, MotoGPOD.com. And until we talk to you again next week, keep the shiny side up, the rubber side down, if you are fortunate enough to live in an area where it is currently riding weather, because for me right here, it's just too cold and nasty and wet. But we'll talk to you again next week. MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I'm solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.
That was so bad. I don't know if you could do anything with that ending, but that was terrible.